And openness resumes. We're pleased to be joined again by Joel Kotkin, Presidential Fellow in Urban Futures at Chapman University and Executive Director of the Urban Reform Institute. His new book, The Coming of Neo-Feudalism, is now out from Encounter. Joel, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
We've talked about this before, per your book, The Coming of Neo-Feudalism. You see the middle-income families sort of in two camps, and you put it in medieval terms, the yeomanry and the clerisy. The yeomanry, the blue-collar workers, those who don't have political clout, social status, as it were, and the professional managerial class, as is my handle on it, that would be the clerisy. With what's happened in the cities now in the last 90 days and just in the last 7 days and the combination of the two, does that change your outlook for neo-feudalism in this country at all?
No, I think it's what we've been seeing is neo-feudalism, if anything, has gotten stronger. In neo-feudalism, the two ascendant classes are the tech oligarchs who have, by the way, done very well and are going to do even better given the greater reliance on technology and remote work. This is an enormous win for these companies. So this group, the oligarchs, who are aristocracy, have gotten stronger. So too has the clerisy. So too have been epidemiologists, who are now celebrities. You have expertise, the idea that science is something like revealed religion. It always amazes me, given that my father was a scientist, and he always used to say to me, well, who killed the most people in the world? It was doctors. because he said what he learned as a doctor training in Boston in the late 1930s turned out to be, a lot of it, he said, was actually quite bad.
Thus, the practice of medicine, right?
Right. And he always said that there was a certain degree of an art in it, and you couldn't quantify everything. I think this idea that we can quantify anything like, let's say, climate change or now the pandemic, and if we do this, this will happen. And I mean, these projections were so wrong. I mean, they were wrong on every side. They were wrong initially in not seeing the threat. They were wrong and then exaggerating the threat. So the clerisy, though, has become very, very powerful. And of course, the media has become very, very powerful. And it's also rather interesting to me how much the media seems to more or less embrace even the looting and the violence. They don't certainly see it as legitimate. Who's been hurt? The yeoman, the small business owner, many times a minority in California, 60% of all the restaurant owners are minorities. They've been decimated. Small property owners. I was interviewing an attorney in Leimert Park, which is a middle-class enclave in South Los Angeles, and about how all these people she knows who are, they own a couple of buildings. This was going to be their retirement, and now they can't get rents. You even now have, in some municipalities talking about, having the right of squatters. Very difficult to get anyone out of an apartment, that's for sure.
Let's hold it right there. Let me hold it right there. When we come back, I want to pick up on that point about the experts, including the celebrity epidemiologists, as well as the serfs that you see on the streets in part. More with Joel Kotkin, Presidential Fellow in Urban Futures at Chapman University, author of The Coming of Neo-Feudalism, right after this.
This is the Dan Proft Show.
Welcome back to the Dan Proft Show. We were talking to Joel Kotkin, Presidential Fellow in Urban Futures at Chapman University, Executive Director of the Urban Reform Institute, and author of The Coming of Neo-Feudalism, now out from Encounter Books. And we were talking about some people who have been hurt, who don't have the political clout, who are caught in the crossfire, and what that will mean for the landscape looking ahead. Here's another example of what Joel Kotkin was talking about before the break. This African-American lady, who is a co-owner of a grocery store in the Bronx, and listen to what she had to say to those who were destroying her neighborhood.
You says Black Lives Matter. I worked here part time. Plus, I'm a part owner of this store. You said Black Lives Matter.
Tell him, sister.
Look what you did to my store.
Tell him, sister.
No!
Joel, it doesn't seem like there are too many members of the clergy that want to speak for that shop owner.
Yeah, well, because fundamentally, there's a large amount of disdain for people like that woman. Maybe she doesn't have a PhD in grievance studies, but she worked really hard. I mean, I was interviewed a woman who runs a dry cleaning store that's been there for 60 years in South Los Angeles the other day. And, you know, she says, well, you know, how long can we keep this up? We've been through, you know, now this is the third major riot in the last 55 years, 60 years, the pandemic. I mean, these people are struggling to survive, and I don't think academics and the media have a great deal of sympathy for these people. And, of course, one of the problems with the yeomanry, and, you know, the same thing could be said about people live in suburbs, and the same thing could be said of middle-class families, they don't have time to work the streets. They don't have time to go and cultivate reporters. You know, if you're raising a family and you have a house and you're trying to keep things going, you're too busy with other things to worry about sort of ideological issues or sort of abstractions. And so I think what's happening is we're just seeing this separation between the sort of clerical class and the oligarchs above them, who also in many cases fund what they're doing.
And there seems to be, you know, sort of two systems in operation, right? Both in terms of what you can do or not do, as well as the consequences attendant to what you do or don't do. For example, you can steal and there are no consequences. You steal from a business. You can burn down a business, no consequences. You open your business, consequences. You get a ticket from the city or worse. In addition to that, the consequences of bad actions or being wrong. I mean, before the House, a committee of the House of Lords, Neil Ferguson, the Imperial College London modeler who came up with these worst case scenario predictions that were wildly off about the death totals that COVID-19 would impose. And now he's saying, you know, lockdown is a very crude policy. And what we'd like to do is have a much more targeted approach that does not have the same economic impacts. I mean, his model was what the West adopted for these draconian lockdowns. People like me and others, including medical professionals, suggesting maybe we need to learn more. Maybe we phase in the lockdown and so we can phase it out too. Let's measure twice and cut once. We're crazy. We're killing grandma and grandpa. And now the guy whose work all these the lockdown decisions were made is saying, yeah, you know what? In retrospect, we should have probably not chosen such a crude measure in response to COVID-19. And he just goes about his merry way waiting for the next pandemic to offer his next models.
You know, this has become a very well-orchestrated attempt to create, I think, almost a sort of, and again, I find this very much in parallel with the Middle Ages, the sense of apocalypse, that the world is coming to an end, and if we don't do this, 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 and this, you know, the sort of Greta Thunberg view of the world,
right,
has become very mainstream. It's, you know, I'm not going to argue whether, you know, I mean, I think there is clearly a problem with pollution and climate probably, you know, has been affected by this. I wouldn't doubt it, but how do you solve it? How extreme is it? Are we going to see the kind of things, you know, go and play an Al Gore speech of 10 years ago and what he predicted. And you'll find that the, you know, things have been exaggerated. You know, there's a natural tendency in the media to exaggerate things in order to get attention. I mean, one of the great ironies of this at the end of the day is by having helped create a economic catastrophe of sorts, many of the people in the media are going to end up losing their job. No, Chris Cuomo's not going to lose his job.
Right.
And Wolf Blitzer's not going to lose his job. And Tucker Carlson's not going to lose his job. But, you know, who is going to lose his job is the 28-year-old and the 25-year-old. I get interviewed a lot by these young reporters because I've written a lot about millennials. The numbers of them who have lost their jobs, who have been, I remember some young woman, she'd just been laid off. She's living in a studio apartment in Stuyvesant Town and hasn't essentially been outside for 3 months. What's weird is many of the people who are going to be suffering from this are the very people who have participated in creating these conditions. I mean, it's, you know, I guess as you get older, you know, irony is something that you kind of get to enjoy. And I think that that's very much what we, you know, what we now see. We see the results being quite negative. You know, this idea that, well, if we, you know, like the Massachusetts Attorney General saying, well, you know, it's like a forest fire. You know, you get new growth because of the burning it. You're Attorney General. Do you understand that if the basic social contract no longer exists, in other words, I own a house or I want to go, you know, shopping with my wife, that I have some degree of rights not to be accosted by, you know, some crazy person on the street, or not to have, you know, not to have a purse snatched, or in all those things that you need for a civil society. You know, I always find interesting, much more socialist societies, like I did a lot of work in Singapore, which has some degree of a socialist society, and certainly traditional socialist societies, and certainly China, they would never allow this kind of behavior. I mean, forget about it. You wouldn't even think about it.
Well, it's really a telling statement, too, that you view the Massachusetts Attorney General, for example, it's really instructive. You view your fellow citizens of certain within certain strata as tinder for a controlled burn.
Right.
It's remarkable. It's a remarkable statement. It's so insightful in terms of the mindset. He is Joel Kotkin, Presidential Fellow in Urban Futures at Chapman University, Executive Director of the Urban Reform Institute. His new book, The Coming of Neo-Feudalism, now out from Encounter Books. Joel, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Take care.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is the Dan Proft Show.